welcome to TCJ Talkies. This is the podcast that is hosted at the Comics Journal, and I am the host of that podcast, and my name is Mike Dawson. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Dawes, which is always hard for me to say. This is a podcast where I have other cartoonists come on to chat about other cartoonists' graphic novels. It's a book club talk. And this episode, I'm very happy to have with me Katie Skelly, who is the author of Nurse Nurse and Operation Margarine, and she's also, you're serializing Agent 9, right, continually?
Yeah, I'm doing those for a website called Flooded.com, and every now and then I'm putting them out in mini-comic installments, so yeah.
So that's an ongoing thing, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, so anyway, so welcome Katie. Katie's here in the room with me.
Yay, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Did you go to Mocha this last week?
I was not at Mocha. It's the first time in a really long time I haven't been at Mocha, but I have been on bridesmaid duty for a few months now, and that weekend happened to be my girlfriend's bachelorette party. So I was nearby, but I was not at Mocha.
Oh, so you're actually in New York City, but you had to be doing bridesmaids things?
Yes, exactly.
You could hear the sounds of mini comics from across.
Yeah, exactly. I could hear, you know, just all that money being made, and I just missed it so much. But, you know, we were at the Ace Hotel, which was really close, and it was really fun. So sad to miss it this year, but hopefully we'll be back on the stick next year.
It was a 2-day bachelorette party? Bachelor party?
Yeah, that's kind of how this stuff goes now. I'm not really, like, super familiar with it, but apparently bachelorette parties can take like a week now, so
really?
I was just on like a 2-day shift. Yeah, it's really involved.
Her thing actually was going on for a week, but you were just there for 2 of the days.
Yeah, no. Exactly. I was like, this is all I can handle.
I actually missed SPX last year for a bachelor party.
Oh, see, there you go. It happens. Happens to the best of us.
Exact same story. I was, it was SPX weekend. One of my best friend from high school, I was organizing his bachelor party. We actually went to Colorado for a long weekend.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
And then his wedding got called off.
Oh.
Waste of, of a bachelor party. Well, I guess it's fine. But,
oh, my God.
He said he feels a bit sheepish because we were all treating him to the, No, he's fine. Don't feel bad for him.
Yeah, no. That's, like, the biggest, like, asshole response. Like, but it's probably for the best. But I hope you had a good time.
I did have a good time.
Good.
I couldn't hear the sounds of mini comics being folded and money being made, but, yeah.
Right. People just staying up late and waking up hungover, and, yeah. Although that was kind of my weekend, so that's okay.
Well, you are 30, right? Or in your...
I just turned 30. Yeah, I turned 30 in February.
So are you at the age where... bachelorette parties and marriages and stuff and weddings are still lots of them happening?
It's like still new and a lot more I think are still on my horizon. But I don't really have like a ton of friends that are married or have kids yet. This is kind of like the first big one, I feel like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's the beginning.
Yeah, like right at the like tip of the wave, I feel like. Like it's starting to like tip over and soon I'll be just surrounded by weddings.
Yeah, see, I think this one was my last, that was the last wave to wash up on shore. I think I'm about done now. So.
Yeah, it sounds like it maybe ended a little bit unceremoniously, so maybe yeah. It's time to
I've got no more friends who are, you know, everyone's all married off, or, you know, now it's starting to get to be divorce time. So
oh, yeah.
That's what happens 10 years in the future.
That's what happens.
Anyway, this show is not about bachelor parties.
Could be.
This is a show where we're going to discuss a graphic novel, which you picked.
Yeah.
And so the graphic novel is The Book of Human Insects by Osamu Tezuka. So why don't you start off and tell me why you chose this book?
I chose this book for a few reasons. First and foremost being that I'm a big Tezuka fan, particularly of this period of his work, 1970 on. I really like Tezuka at that point.
So I'm not super familiar with him. Is is it the middle of his career or is it a...
Middle to the end, because he only lived to be about 60 years old, so he didn't He wasn't around for, like, that much longer after this period. Well, that's not entirely true, but I feel like the work after this period, like, is a little bit more inconsequential to me. But this is when you have the rise of Gekiga in Japan. So sort of like, this is when comic books start transitioning into graphic novels.
Is that what that is? You said, what did you call it? I'm totally, totally not that familiar.
Oh, that's okay. Gekiga, so G-E-K-I-G-A.
Okay.
So this is when you start seeing more sort of literary-minded manga coming up, and Yoshihiro Tatsumi, who recently passed away, coined that term for it. So you start seeing comics that treat more realistic themes, sort of a little bit more gritty, a little bit more brutal, and Tezuka is sort of starting to find his way into that particular genre. And I think, for me, I start to see it around this book. Like, that's when that turn sort of happens into, like, the dark side of Tezuka. So, I got the vertical reprint in 2012, I want to say. And it was, like, right around when I was finishing up Nurse and getting started on Operation Margarine. And I liked that it was a darker piece, and I liked that sort of, like, hard edge. And I think in my own stuff, like, the turn from, like, the end of Nurse to, like, the beginning and the end of Operation Margarine, my stuff started getting a little bit darker, too. I think it's, like, just finding, like, being able to find the confidence to get into that sort of tone via books like Book of Human Insects.
So had you read a lot of Shizuka prior to this then? Like, you, I know Buddha, I read some of that. That's an earlier one, is that?
Well, Buddha actually was, I think, around the same period. But what you have kind of immediately after Human Insects is you have books like Ayako, M.W. Otakirohito. You have a book called Barbara, which was basically about, like, an alcoholic hippie woman. The way that I kind of think of it is, like, imagine, you know, Walt Disney had given you, like, Bambi and Snow White and all of these classics and these family favorites, and then in the 70s he turns around and directs something like Klute or something like that. So you get this really, it must have been really sort of shocking at the time when this came out. And not that Tezuka had never dealt with dark themes before, but to get a book, I think, as, like, relentlessly pessimistic as Book of Human Insects must have been really sort of shocking.
Is that how you, like, do you sort of see it as a pessimist? Like, we should maybe talk about, like, what the book is about, right? So.
Yeah.
So. You want me to do it? Because I did read the book.
Yeah, no, please, go ahead.
Okay, because, So the main character's name is Toshiko Tamura, and this is that right?
Yeah, you got it.
this is unusual for me, because I'm not that familiar with I had read some manga like stuff a couple years back, like when it was kind of like people were embracing it, sort of alternative comics, but it never really quite like it's never been something where like I've really been able to find my way fully into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that a little bit, but like, so it's not something I'm able to read that easily. So the story is about this woman called Toshika Tamura. It's set in 1970. It takes place in Tokyo, right?
Yeah.
And this character, she's in her early 20s, and what she does is she's very ambitious, and ever since she was a teen, she works her way into people's lives, creative people. Gets very close to them, well, creative people to start, gets very close to them and sort of learns from them, like, what they're doing, and then kind of takes over, like, takes their, like, sort of drains from them their abilities and ends up doing things better than they could, like acting, and then later on graphic design and writing, and then further on, like, other types of things. Is that right?
Yeah, you got it.
Is that right? Did I read that book?
You did it.
You find it pessimistic, though?
So we have that element of that's the sort of main summary, like the main gist of it. But what you have is you have this character that is, mimicking and sort of not only mimicking, but also stealing, plagiarizing things She's getting into, like, for instance, there's a design competition early in her story where she steals designs from her sort of mentor come boyfriend and is able to win contests. And she has that sort of sociopathic streak in her where she's like, well, I did this before you, so, you know, it's kind of your fault that you didn't turn it in before me, stuff like that. So I do think there's like a pretty dark edge to it. And I'll talk about this a little bit more if you want later in the discussion, but I think that there's a reflection of where Tezuka was in his career when he's writing the story too, that we can talk about. But I think in terms of like the overall plot, at the end you end up with a body count. I mean, you can give spoilers on this show, right?
Yeah,
you don't care.
Yeah.
It's a book club. You have a body count of, I want to say, 6 or 7 people. The majority of those are Toshiko's fault or something that she, like, kind of planned or directly caused, what have you.
She kills... Mm-hmm. The first one is the other writer who hangs herself.
Yeah. Right.
And that is...
Although she's accused of being a murderer. She's accused of actually hanging that woman herself and not...
Well, that's true. It's made to look like a suicide. This is the woman that she had written a book called the Book of Human Insects, and this is a roommate of hers, right? And she'd basically gone through all her research and just written the book quicker. There's a reporter who's trying to basically get to the bottom of who she is, and she has him killed by this anarchist assassin.
Yeah, he's a great character.
Yes.
Has him killed.
And then she has the anarchist killed, right? She has a...
Yeah, eventually.
The anarchist.
So, I mean, she's kind of a classic femme fatale in that anyone that gets involved with her to any level is going to die. But she has this appeal about her that makes her irresistible, particularly to men in the story. And she's even able to seduce some women, too. Which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's a fiance of the I guess you said it was her mentor before. It's hard because I can't remember the names offhand.
There are a lot of characters. There's a ton of characters.
But so that the graphic design mentor that she had, who she also stole from, and she basically took his design and then won a design competition. Later on, after they've broken up, he becomes engaged to someone who looks exactly like her. And that's, I guess that's the example. She then, in some ways, sort of seduces that fiancé of the mentor, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, maybe not so much sexually, but she is able to lure her in and get her to do her bidding really quickly.
Yes, very easily.
that character is also a very sweet, sort of naive character. And her name, I believe, is Shijimi.
Yeah.
And we kind of find out that she's not really long for this world anyway, so, you know, YOLO, like, be your fiancé's ex-girlfriend for a day, whatever.
There's a scene Toshiko Tamura, it's later on in the book, she's gotten married to this, like, captain of industry type of guy, and she said this very strange marriage where they hate each other and they're basically trying to get the one or the other to fail out of the contract, which is their marriage first. But she runs into her former lover, this graphic design mentor, on a train, and he's with Shijimi, and that's when she realizes that he's gotten a new relationship going. And that was a part where this is where, like, you know, this type of comic is it's something I'm not used to, like. There's a conversation happening between Toshiko Tamura and her former boyfriend, and they're, like, yelling about, like, why are you here? And, like, all the things you've done, you're horrible, go away, and don't endanger us. And then the fiancé is as if she doesn't hear it. Like,
right.
Like, and, like, is that a stylistic thing, you think? Like, she's sort of like, oh, who was that?
that is kind of a bizarre thing. And I think... You know, there are a bunch of instances in this book where you don't really know who is talking or what's actually being heard. So I kind of think of this story as like a neo-noir. But, you know, because you have instances of voiceover, but the speaker will change often, sometimes like sort of mid-sentence, like right in the beginning, you have the reporter who is in love with Toshiko, and you have this sort of generic voiceover about what's going on in the story, and then it immediately switches into his voice, and he's sort of talking about, like, well, I'm in love with her, and don't I deserve a chance with her, even though I'm like a third-rate journalist.
Yeah.
So you have these really confusing sort of instances, and I don't know that I can really point to like that as a particular trope of manga or even of Tezuka's. I'm not really quite sure what that is, but it adds to that sort of like disorienting pace and, you know, style of this book. Everything always seems to be happening at once.
That's a good point. Like, what happened with me was I read probably about maybe the first 50 or 60 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of at that point, I don't know what I'm looking at, right?
Right.
So as you're sort of saying, like, I'm not meaning to sound like I didn't. I really did like it. I enjoyed it. But
mm-hmm. Oh, good. I'm glad.
It's not as easy for me to sort of, like, it's... as you sort of saying, like, I wasn't, like, you sort of, it's a little confusing about, like, who is the main character of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sort of like, where's this going? Because it jumps perspective a couple times, right, in the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
I guess this is a book about this reporter. You know, like, and, you know, which is not true at all. Like, he sort of becomes the narrator for a little bit, and then, like, he sort of drops out, and he's done. And what happened was I got a little ways in, like a day or two passed, and I came back to him, like, I'm going to start over, and, you know, start from the beginning, which really, like, did help a lot, like, because then I was able to, like, go through the whole thing, and, like, I had a complete grasp. But I would say it was a little disorienting at first for me. Go ahead.
I think that, you know, like I was saying earlier, it's like, it's a story that you can enjoy on so many different levels. Like, something that I like about Tezuka in general is you can pick up any one of his books and you can enjoy it just as like a page turner. You can read it for the mystery. You can be into it for the style. You can be into it to just kind of understand the time period a little bit better or understand where he was in his career. So when you have like such a wealth of titles and works like Tezuka has, it's kind of fun to pick up a book like this where it's not 700 pages or like 20 installments. It's just this one shot that gives you an idea of like what was going on right then. So I think that's something really cool about this book.
Was this book, do you know, was it always published as in one go then?
Well, I don't know if it was serialized. I wasn't able to find that information anywhere, which is odd. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if it was published as just like one title.
Maybe,
it reads like it was published in installments.
Yeah, it's episodic. Like,
mm-hmm.
like she essentially, you know, she moves from, I guess, man to man and kind of career
right.
to career. So in the beginning, she's this writer, you know, she's this award-winning writer, having stolen from the from a former roommate. And then I believe right after that is when the assassin comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes this this thing where she almost sort of is becoming like an assassin. Right, she
steals
definitely. From him,
mm-hmm.
And that like leads to her going to Korea with the assassin
right.
after an attempt on the prime minister of Japan's life.
Mm-hmm.
The assassin's killed. She goes to jail in Korea,
mm-hmm. which is like this whole extra like international component to it. That's really interesting, but I also think lends it this like noir element, you know, because you're sort of going. You're like crossing boundaries and borders and stuff throughout the story too. So she also like she has this sort of perpetual interest in grief. That's interesting too. As if like that's going to solve all her problems if she's going to go to Greece and that's just going to be fine. Yeah, she's in jail. She's sprung from jail by that CEO that you mentioned earlier, who is becomes I think the CEO of Dai Nippon Steel. And then they have this sort of marriage hate pact where they're going to get married, but they hate each other and they're just going to kind of almost see like who can live longer
it's like
in
a battle
this
of
situation.
Wills, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like that Mr. Show sketch where like, I think Bob Odenkirk and David Cross get into like a fight at a bar and they just keep threatening each other until eventually one of them dies in like the nursing home. But it's this really just like long drawn out thing. And the genesis of it is, like, when she gets sprung from the Korean jail, they sleep together, and he's ready to just kind of bolt in the morning, and she's really insulted, and he says something like, the next time I see you, it'll be when you're begging me to marry me, something like that. And so there's this actually really, really great panel of her leaning up against like a telephone pole, and she's like, that guy will rue the day, I will destroy his life, I'll figure out a way to do it. So that's an interesting turn. Like, she goes from, I'm going to absorb talents and I'm going to work my way up in the world and just kind of see what happens, to, I'm going to destroy someone who just slighted me a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is another, like, big sociopathic tendency.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Because he pulls her out of Korean jail, and in payment, you know, she has sex with him, and he just, you know. But, yeah, she could have easily just moved on from that. Like, you know.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Or she could have gotten close to him and stole his company, or any other number of things. So it was an interesting choice to be like, okay, well, this is probably the most free woman in the world, because she has this ability to take anybody's talent at any given time. So I'm going to kind of saddle her in a marriage that's very unhappy. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, and it's the first time in the book actually, sort of, where you sort of feel like she's losing control, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because she gets married to this CEO character, and it becomes this battle of wills, and for a while there, it seems like she's sort of like, you know, she's not winning. And it's one of those weird things, because she's not a nice person, but you're rooting for her.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, I mean, even though, you know, I think the, like, the back of the book makes this point that, like, what does it say? Let me find it. The Book of Human Insects traces the career of an ingenue who is every bit those men's match, but is far from a feminist role model. And I'm not sure what exactly a feminist role model in fiction would be. But, you know, she's able to take these things and, like, mimic them. But she's also very aware of how she's seen, particularly how she's seen by the media. And she even sort of remarks at one point in an interview, someone is telling her, like, you've been dubbed as a woman of interest. And, like, how does that make you feel? And she said, well, that's your term. That's not mine. So she's always... You know, even when she's alone, she talks about feeling like she's being watched, and like how she presents herself is very important to her. Obviously, you know, she always looks great. She always has like a really good pantsuit on or a really good beret, and her hair is, you know, always very perfect. So she's definitely aware of that sort of, you know, dichotomy that like men are the ones that act and women are the ones who appear. So she's always got that in mind. And one thing I want to point out is that I get really, not frustrated, but I'm just sort of, like, perplexed by this argument now that, like, fashion in comics is, like, just starting to get better or whatever. Like, I've just seen that floating around, and I'm like, it's really cool.
What do you mean
really
by that,
cool.
Fashion?
Well, I mean, people are, like, just so happy that Batgirl has a pair of pants now or whatever. But, like, when you look at stuff like the Book of Human Insects, I mean, this is a book whose fashion was really on point. I think this is an author, or this is a writer and an artist that was looking at contemporary women's fashion at that period and putting it into his work.
Yeah.
And not just doing that, but doing it with a flair. Like, you can see the love for those patterns and that material, and, you know, the way that it made that character feel. So I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah. I wonder about that. But do you think maybe the people saying that, like, it's because of maybe Marvel, DC?
I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. Like, I know that those are the things that actually get seen. This is a reprint that took, 40 years to come out. So
I don't know what I'm saying. Is like, I'm sort of thinking, I growing up on, like, mainstream American comics,
mm-hmm.
They were never that, like, quite in step with fashion. They all sort of seem like about 10 years behind, sort of, you know, how people dressed. You know,
yeah, definitely.
Like, sort of like a very sort of fuzzy idea of, like, you know, what, how the kids looked, like a Steve. Yeah, I always think of Steve Ditko character. Maybe his singing stuff is okay, but I was reading like Speedball, which is like a 90s comic, and it still looked like characters coming from, you know, look like they're from the 60s.
That
was not something I actually noticed that much reading this book. That was that something you Is that unique to this book, the way he's drawing, the way people are dressed, or is that something like you find in his work?
Well, I'm trying to think of like work around that period, and the only other thing that comes to mind is Ayako, but that was sort of more of a period piece. I think like an Edo period. So there's not, or actually, was it? This is more post-war. But yeah, I think I don't know. This book stands out to me more. So I mean, like,
Tell me what you're going to say about where you think Tezuka was with his career and how that plays into the story.
So I want to apologize for coughing. I've had these like allergies for a couple weeks now. It's really annoying.
It is supposed to be like the worst allergy moment of the year so far.
I don't even want to get out of bed in the morning.
Spring is here.
Yeah, I know, right? Spring is here, and like I guess that's like the April is the coolest month thing is actually about allergies. So you have the sort of rise of Gekiga, and sometimes I think like how important those comics were in terms of like the overall scope of manga, in just in terms of popularity, might be like a little bit overstated. But it's definitely a trend that Tezuka took note of. And I think when you look at the sort of questions that this book raises about authenticity and authorship and genius, it becomes more interesting when you're thinking about, like, Tezuka felt like this new wave of artists was in competition with him and he was sort of becoming obsolete. And even though he had created so many great works and sort of pioneered manga and anime, there was still this whole new crop coming up that maybe was going to reject his values. And that must have been a little bit frightening, you know, because we do know that he was an artist that had a pretty considerable ego. So when you have this sort of young character that you can look at as a stand-in for this new generation, and she's able to absorb and mimic, you know, what other artists are doing, more respected artists are doing during that time period, it could be, I mean, I don't like to psychoanalyze authorship or think that there's ever a one-to-one correlation, but these themes were on his mind. And I think it's really interesting to think about, like, you know, it's almost like, okay, he sets up this, like, rubric of what a genius is, I think, in this book. Because one of the downfalls with Toshiko is she's never really able to create her own stuff.
Okay.
And he points this out when she's in that acting troupe. And at first she starts mimicking that young actress. And then that becomes a little bit grating because everybody knows that she's just sort of copying this person.
Yeah.
So then she goes and starts copying the veteran actress and she's taking on her style and then she's able to be praised again. So Tezuka sort of sets up this rubric that someone that's a real genius doesn't have to copy whatever else is going on. They can just create their own stuff over and over again.
Okay.
So it's almost like he's confirming that rubric for himself. Like when you look at his oeuvre, it's like, I've created so many different things. I didn't have to rely on any sort of pattern. I didn't have to rely on any formula. I was just constantly creating new things over and over again, and they were always a hit. So in a way, it's almost like he's reconfirming himself. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. So you're saying maybe he looks at her, like what she's doing, sort of as that next generation, and they're not able to do like what he sort of feels he's done. That's interesting if you are sort of saying that, because it's also like he's not non-sympathetic towards her as a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
well, I mean, there always has to be someone that comes behind, right? I mean, you can't be such a megalomaniac as to think that like whatever work you do, like it's going to be so good that everything after you just stops. You know, like that, you set up this sort of, he's sort of set up this industry, excuse me. So to expect that people wouldn't follow in his footsteps would be pretty insane.
Do you think that was he sort of angry about where things are going then, do you think?
I've never really been able to find, like, any particular writing on it, but colloquially, I've always sort of understood that Tezuka wanted to start doing work like this almost as like a fuck you to Gekiga, and like to say, not only did I, you know, pave the way for this, but I can also do it better than you.
So that's interesting. So this, again, I'm sort of not like that familiar with what like the Gekiga stuff
is.
So this is like, this would be sort of like very much along the same lines as like what that work was.
Well, if you think about Tezuka versus,
I was going to ask, like, is this like a thing, like when graphic novels sort of became a thing in America the last 10 years, and like people sort of all felt like that was what the kind of comics people should be doing, and everyone's rushing to do graphic novels and a certain type of book, which people think of as a graphic novel. And it's sort of a trend, right?
Yeah, definitely. And, like, I think maybe even, like, some of the resistance that people have had towards Scott McCloud's new book is almost, like, of the same sort of, like, maybe it comes from the same sort of place where it's, like, you don't really have a stake in what the younger generation is doing, and the way that you're doing it is very old-fashioned and it's sort of, like, unappealing.
Okay.
So I think, you know, people have been sort of lashing out at that book because it's old-fashioned. I haven't read it. I don't really know that much about the other than what I've read and, like, criticism and heard and everything like that. I can't say I'm, like, particularly excited to read it or anything. I think it's an old generation versus a new generation sort of thing.
I've not read that book either.
Are you going to?
I don't know. I never thought about it.
The cover looks real bad.
What's that?
The cover looks real bad.
The cover is rough. I mean, it is, right? Like, you know, it's hard to, like, you know.
It would be like,
I'm not as ballsy as those comic books are burning in hell people. Just, you know, the tear right into
it. They were so mad. I that was so entertaining. I mean, regardless of, like, where you fall and if it's a good book or a bad book, like, you can't deny that that was really entertaining.
No, I mean, well, the thing is, like, it's just, for me, it's one of those things, like, where Scott McCloud was, like, super, like, a super, you know, it was a big part of, like, my comics coming up, but this book coming out, like, I actually just sort of wasn't really on my radar, like, like, as something, like, that I felt, like, necessary to me, and it could be, actually, that I have found my own taste, sort of, like, I'm sort of drifting a little bit away from, sort of, you know, a graphic novel, you know, I'm starting to get more interested in, like, shorter work again, and, like, you know, and I'm sort of wondering a little bit if, because I was always very, like, much on the comics are just as literary as literature, that I might have sort of gone a little too far in that direction, and I'm sort of wondering these days, and I'm like, maybe not. Maybe comics, like, aren't very good literature. Maybe that's not really their strength. Like, you know, like, and we've had a lot of graphic novels in the last 10 years that are sort of, you know, trying to achieve, you know, something that, you know, that maybe isn't, like, the place where we should be. I don't know. Does that make any sense to you?
I get you. I mean, I think...
Because it just sort of comes out again, like, it just looks like another big sort of serious book, and I'm starting to wonder, like, maybe I don't want to read those things anymore.
Well, I think, you know, if you are interested in some Gekiga stuff, which it sounds like maybe you might be, I would recommend the Tatsumi, just, like, collection of short stories. My favorite is Abandon the Old in Tokyo. Okay, great. Which was a nice little reprint of all that stuff, and it's one of my favorite collections ever. But just think about, like, the Tatsumi story where the guy goes out of business and everyone is mad at him and he's not able to pay his bills, and the only way that he's able to seek any kind of solace is by fucking the dog prostitute. I don't even know how else to say it, but he has sex with that dog at, like, the dog sex club, whatever. That is some pretty brutal shit. So that's what you have coming out around this time. And then think about what's going on in Book of Human Insects. It's still dark, and there are still some pretty dark things going on. You have abortion, you have sort of some questionable rape, you have assault, and I just say questionable there in that there's some sort of weird bends in the narrative that make you unsure of what actually happened. But it's also, you're running around and, you know, there's still, Kazuko can't resist making people cartoony. Like, he just can't. You know, when you look at Tatsumi characters, yeah, they're also stylized to a certain extent, but they're able to, I think, evoke a lot more. There's a lot more humanity to those characters. So, yeah, Kazuko is taking this in a certain direction, but he's not able to get to those depths that Tatsumi could, just in terms of, like, despair, I feel like. You know, he can't resist all the plots and, like, plot twists and turns and sort of fun things that you might get in previous stories. So it might even be, you know, that same lens that, like, you know, why do you look at a Dash Shaw book one way and look at, you know, the new Scott McCloud book another way? Because one is able to get to those hikes, and the other one isn't. The other one is sort of relying on an old formula, even though they might think they are not.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. It was actually something I was thinking about a little bit reading the book, just what you're talking about in terms of style.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is this cartooniness to the characters,
mm-hmm.
which is, in some ways, is a little bewildering compared, you know, like, there's so much, like, craft in, you know, in many of the panels, you know, especially all the establishing shots, you know, like, I know that's pretty common, like, where, like, you know, there, like, there's this amazing, these amazing drawings
mm-hmm.
throughout the book, and then the characters, many times, I mean, they'll be very loose, like, very mm-hmm. sort of loose and floopy and kind of, like, you know, like especially every time she's naked, like, it's like she's got, like,
yeah.
a sort of, like, Gumby body. Like
yeah, yeah.
Like she's got boobs, but, like, everything else is, like, sort of, like, kind of, like, it's, like, Gumby, you know, like, with her head on it. And expressions
well,
are a little weird. Like
mm-hmm.
they aren't very expressive, like, the faces.
Yeah.
Like, oftentimes, characters will be saying they feel a certain way, but, like, it doesn't look that way at all
mm-hmm.
in terms of how their faces, like, is that, you notice that too?
Yeah, definitely. And the point you make about her body is really interesting because for a book that, you know, is willing to confront subjects like abortion and, you know, almost like female agency and sexual fluidity, you know, Toshiko, as we talked about earlier, is able to seduce men and women. When she's naked, you know, you do have that Gumby sort of approach that you mentioned, but it's also like all of her body hair is removed. Like, she's never really able to look passionate. Some of the sex scenes take place in the dark. And,
yeah.
You know, at a certain point, right in the beginning, the reporter that is after her, in one panel just sort of turns into this wolf character, and she turns into like a little fox just sort of sprinting away from him. And it's funny, but it does sort of throw like sexuality into this joke, which is sort of odd for a book that's able to confront so many other things.
Yeah, he's saying to her, like, she's speaking to him as if he's not a man with desires. And
right.
the point he's trying to make is, I too am a man, you know. And
yeah.
it's supposed to be that, like, and he wants this, you know, he wants sex from her. And you're right, they turn into, like, they look like Disney, like, Bambi characters. Like,
right, exactly.
You know, and he sort of leaps on her. There was a scene. I'm trying to remember what it was. There was a strange scene, which was sort of like, wasn't there something where, like, she was, like, I'm not sure if she was raped or if it was, like, but it seemed like you couldn't tell if it was consensual or not.
Yeah, well, the anarchist.
Oh, the anarchist, that's what it was. Yeah, like, she had to, like, get him, like, he wasn't interested in her sexually.
Right. But she kind of convinces him that he's taking advantage of her
yeah.
at a certain point. But you don't know that until the next time that they sleep together when she says, I convinced you to take advantage of me. So there's a, excuse me, there's a gray area there that's a little bit dicey. But we haven't even talked about the really disturbing and odd piece of this, which is her relationship with her mother.
Yes.
Which kind of like, this is where in the beginning of the story, you start to get the sense that maybe this is a supernatural story. But then it's almost like a giallo film. Like, you have this sort of mystery and you think it might be a ghost or a demon or some sort of possessive thing. But it ends up just being kind of like a murder mystery with all kinds of greed and lust and stuff thrown on top of it, which is great. We kind of find out that Toshiko is just like a country girl, and she had a very close relationship with her mother. Her mother died, and Toshiko made a wax figure of her mother, sort of an exact replica. And after Toshiko sort of completes these tasks of taking on somebody else's talents and becoming successful at them, she goes on these retreats back to the country to be alone with this mother figure, and she takes all of her clothes off, and sometimes she'll breastfeed from this figure, sort of, or just sort of roll around with it. It's like somewhat sexual.
Yeah, it's partially because of the way he draws, like, because he reveals the mother's breasts, and they're like, you know, the big voluptuous breasts.
Right.
It doesn't look like an infant nursing. It does look somewhat kind of sexual. And then
right.
It is like, then there's this aspect which looks kind of like masturbatory, like where she's sort of rolling around. That's where the reporter first sees her.
Right.
And it is true. You sort of wonder, like, is this like a source of her power? Like, is this like going to be like a magical element to this? Which turns out, as you said, like, not really. So
right.
are you not really sure what that was supposed to signify? Do you have thoughts on that?
That's a really good question. I mean, if you're looking at it like from this sort of mythology of insects or something similar to that, it's like she is returning and she's kind of going into a cocoon each time. And every time she reemerges, she's able to take on somebody else's sort of talents or what have you. So it could be some kind of like return to a nest type of thing, but like I don't know that that's particular to insects really. I don't know much about the natural world. I'm not gonna lie, but
I feel that way. Like right, like at the beginning, like you know, that she sort of has accomplished something, she's become something, and then she's gonna go back and sort of enter like a chrysalis in a way, and emerge. Like, and she says at some point, like I can't remember exactly what's going on, but something's happening, and she's talking about how she's not in her complete form yet, like she still has like stages she wants to go through, which sort of makes it feel like she's in some sort of larval form,
right?
But it doesn't 100% follow through, you know, like it's a thread, that aspect of it, like it doesn't quite make sense.
it would have been nice to,
like,
I mean,
it's twisted, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what ends up happening a lot in the narrative of this book, too, is that we get a lot of exposition just over that bizarre voiceover that we don't know who is saying. So, like, we kind of learn almost towards the very end that she had this relationship with her mother, and her mother died, and she had this room, and it was full of her dolls, and, you know, someone finds her in that room full of her dolls, and she has, like, a pacifier in her mouth. So there's some kind of weird, like, infantile thing going on, but we never really know quite what it is.
Yeah. I read something. It's not my idea. but it was talking about how this idea of her, like, reinventing herself could be sort of as a metaphor for post-war Japan. Because they were a certain type of country up until the end of the war, and then they were... there was an American somewhat occupation, and, you know, they became this sort of liberal capitalist democracy. They sort of had to take on a new identity and sort of try to figure out who they were. But interestingly, they were doing things that better than, like, say, America was doing. They were a better capitalist democracy than we were. They had sort of, like, got... This is all me saying stuff I read somewhere.
I'm listening. I'm right there with you.
It's talking about, I did refer to that one panel. You see a panel of her towards the end, and she's in some secret room surrounded by, like, all these, like, bits and bobs and, like, bits of pop culture and, like, like products and, you know, toys and things. And she's, like, a baby in there, and, like, she's just sort of, like, surrounded by this mishmash of things. So, and, like all, like, very sort of commercial, if I remember, like, just stuff.
I think that there's definitely truth to that. I mean, and you know, you see those sort of theories coming up in a lot of post-war Japanese art. For instance, like, if you look at the writing of Takashi Murakami, he's talking about how Japan will always be a little boy, how it was infantilized after the atomic bombings, and it wasn't able to really get out from under that shadow, and it always had to sort of be a child, but have this adult face to the world. I did a panel at Japan Society, where I work, in 2013 with Roland Kelp, that was on Tezuka, and he talked a lot about how, you know, Tezuka characters always have to have, like, a dual face to the world. You know, they have, or there's always some sort of, like, internal struggle that they're going through while they have to have a different face to the world. Okay. And that could definitely be, you know, representative of the nation at that time. But that's also, that's still universal too. You know, just like think about the way that you are inside versus the persona that you have to have when you're dealing with the rest of humanity, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that that's a totally fair reading. And I think you can also extrapolate a lot from that. But I would love to see that piece if you still have it around.
I should link to it. I'll link to it on the, because I don't want anyone to be under the impression that I had a smart
ass. Now.
Well,
give yourself some credit. Come on.
No, I mean, yeah, anyway.
You Googled it. That's good.
I did Google it because I wanted to sort of, you know, because I can't, I don't have the context for it as much.
I always feel like I don't know enough either. Like, and even as someone, you know, I've gone out of my way to try to read all of Blackjack and try to, you know, see all the experimental Tezuka films and read as many biographies and all that kind of stuff as possible. But it's still like, you never feel like fully prepared. I never feel fully prepared anyway. But maybe that's my internal dichotomy. Maybe I come off like I know what I'm talking about, but inside I'm like, I feel like an imposter.
Well, I mean, I guess it is always going to feel a little bit, because it is from a different time. It's from a different place, but it's always like it's a different time as well. Do you find, this is a question I'm going to start asking my guests. Is there things from this book in particular, or these types of books that like you sort of bring to your own work, or you feel a connection you have like as a writer as well as a reader?
Yeah. Well, I think stylistically, Tezuka has been a really big influence on me because he's definitely someone who always had like readability in mind. So his comics to me, even though you know the plots can be somewhat crazy, the art and the writing is always very accessible, and that's something that I'm really interested in. I like to keep a page pretty free from clutter, and you know you kind of know exactly where you should be looking and
yeah.
how the action is drawing along and stuff like that. In terms of writing, I think like what I'm writing now, which is a sort of like a teenage vampire sort of a thing, is definitely drawing a lot of influence from a book like Ayako, which does have a lot of twists and turns, but it also still has a lot of ambiguity in the story. That's something that I'm really interested in. Human Insects definitely inspired me in terms of just the style of it. I like the use of black and white is, you know, masterful, as a lot of Tezuka works were. But just having, in terms of just having characters who are like stylish and cool, and you want to know what they're doing, you want to know where they're going and what their sort of nightlife is like and how they talk. And, you know, I find them all just like so appealing and cool, and I want to know what they're doing. So yeah, a book like this is definitely an inspiration for me.
Is this always the sort of comics you've been drawn to?
I guess I just sort of figured out in the last like 5 years or so the kind of books that I want to read, and I've excluded like everything else. I feel like I'm really out of it. I don't know what's out right now. I just know that people are like mad at Scott McCloud, and we're getting a big Guido Krapak 10-volume set in the next couple of years, and otherwise I'm just like dead to the world. I don't know what's going on.
I didn't know people that were that mad at Scott McCloud. That's awesome.
It's out there, man. It's out there. No, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like I'm so
cut off. Your tastes. Would you say they're not like towards like what's happening in like, the current comic scene? Then, like
there, you know, there's so much. There's so much to keep up with, and it's like, I still really want to read Pravda by Guy Tenart and get into this big Krapak series that we have coming out and find like Saga de Zom and get into more Belgian comics. And, you know, like I always tend to gravitate like away from what's happening now. I sort of much rather look at the past.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot there.
There's a lot there. And there, I don't know. I mean, style is something that's really important to me, and I can't get into a book if I don't like the style a lot. So that cuts a lot of stuff out for me. So yeah.
I think we're there then. Was there anything else you actually wanted to say about the book? Do you want to, like, do you have other notes?
Well, there is, like, an interesting factoid about it, which was that the English translation was done by this sort of veteran translator who herself is a veterinarian, and she lives in Brooklyn. So I'm thinking about, like, like, the next time my cat gets sick, I have to find this woman and try to talk to her. I guess I could be normal and, like, try to email her or something, but...
You are going to poison your cat. You're going to be one of those people.
You know what it is?
A little sick, so you can.
I'm going to go and get close to her and absorb all of her veterinary talents and become
an amazing.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Is there any of that? Do you have any sort of?
Excuse me.
Not actually that you're going to go. Do you identify with a character, or not really?
That's a good question. I do and I don't, because it's like, you know, I'm also very, like, aware of myself in space and of myself being looked at and how I'm perceived. But, you know, I don't know. excuse me. I mean, I'm not a sociopath, I'm pretty sure.
No, but I meant, like,
tell.
Yeah, like, but, I don't know, just curious if there was, like, a way that, like, if you felt like you sort of connected with the character.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there, like, those questions of authenticity that she gets in the beginning, when people are sort of doubtful that she could be young and be a woman and also be talented, like, those definitely, you know, you can, I don't even necessarily think it's because I'm a woman, but just, like, anyone who's a creative person who has done anything that's been, like, halfway okay and been sort of questioned on it, I think can relate.
That feels to me like, you know, just the last 3 or 4 years, what I'm aware of comics culture.
Yeah.
No, it does. I'm saying, like, it feels like the greater industry begrudgingly sort of getting over this idea that you could be young, you could be a woman, you could be better at this than most of the people who are, you know, the practitioners. I mean, like, that's, I don't know, that seems to be the thing that's going on.
Yeah. I mean, this certainly couldn't be the sort of champion of that cause, as it's uncovered that, you know, she's a horrendous fake. But those sort of initial questions definitely, like, stuck with me. And I think that's one of the reasons why this book is so important to me and meant so much when I read it the first time and the, like, 47th time, which I did for the show.
You have a podcast yourself, so do you want to let everyone know to check that out?
I do. It's called Trash Twins, and I host it with my friend Sarah Horrocks. And if you just Google Trash Twins, you can probably find it, but the URL is trashtwinspodcast.tumblr.com.
Yes,
and that's a show where we look at, like, sometimes we look at comics, sometimes we look at movies, sometimes we look at art, but it's mostly just kind of an examination of, like, low culture stuff that we really like and the tropes of it and why we like it. So, yeah, we're doing another show. I think we're going to record it this weekend. It's going to be on Cree Pax and Milo Manara and some other stuff, so that'll be cool.
Really? So everyone should check that out.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Katie. Thank you. I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
There he is. Hey, buddy, how was your weekend? Yeah, mine was too short. Hey, did you catch the ball game? Had enough for you? Must be that global warming. So, thank you, Zowie. Working out of Hollywood. Working out of Hollywood. Working out of Hollywood.